international detective dragons from outer space.
Welcome, or welcome back, to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 40. There's no specific topic for this mile marker of a show, but we will be hearing emails from James and Nerdcore Steve. We'll have news and shoutouts, a high-speed chipmunk roundup of episodes 21 through 39, new member welcomes to the forums and Frapper Map, all that and more coming your way right after this.
This is no time to discourse, so God save me.
No! The day is hot and the weather and the wars and the king and the dukes. This is no time to discourse. The town is besieged. Ah, the trumpet calls into the breach, and we talk, and with the holy do nothing. 'Tis a shame for us all, so God save me. 'Tis a shame to stand still. 'Tis a shame by me hand, and there is troops to be cut, and work to be done, and nothing is done, so help me God.
Yes, top of the news in order of occurrence in this universe. Dickie the Stealth Geek is back. I told you he was trying. Well, he got out from under that mountain of crap that just kept stopping him from returning to the Potosphere, and he's got a new episode out in order to celebrate. A bow of thanks to Dickie. He credits IDDFOS, among many other good people, with encouraging him along as he put the pieces of Stealth Geek back together. Well, you're most welcome, Dickie. Glad to hear you're back in action. That's the Stealth Geek Podcast, which you can now reach at its own website, www.thestealthgeek.com. It doesn't get easier than that. Check them out. Now, before I forget, I do have some podcast retrieval warnings to make and a question for some of you about PayPal. Please remind me before I get too far and forget. Okay. Where was I? Next, in order of timeline for news.
Your attention, please. Congratulations to Caroline and Jeff. I truly wish you both the best of days.
Thank you. Next in order of this timeline for news, the camera guy himself, Kurt. You've heard his emails. You've read his posts on many a forum. You've seen his photography for both Gen Con and the many pictures he's taken while out on the road. You know he's one of the coolest people on the planet because he's been in every state in the country. Well, that makes him a wandering geek, doesn't it? And so it does. The camera guy has launched his own podcast, and it's a winner. It's called The Wandering Geek. And you will find a link to The Wandering Geek in this week's Gudikatingatongatongs, of course, as well as in the list of permanent links right on down that right-hand column of the IDDFOS homepage. Way to go, Kurt. I'm not waiting for another break. I'm going to play his promo right here and right now. Check it out.
Do you travel for business, pleasure, or just to stay one step ahead of brain-sucking zombies? And find it hard to keep in touch with geek culture and get your gaming fix? Well, take it from a guy who spends 270 days a year out on the road. You can get your geek on, and the Wandering Geek Podcast is here to help. Every episode, we'll have new and interesting ways to get your geek on while you're on the road, and we'll have interviews with the people who help make it possible. In addition, there'll be DVD news, MMO reports, and all sorts of geeky gaming goodness in the geek buzz. So go to wanderinggeek.podbean.com. No www, just wanderinggeek, www.podbean.com. How do you get your geek on?
Now, I listened to episode zero, as he calls it, and I just have to say, the man knows what he wants to do. He knows what he wants to talk about. He knows exactly what direction he's going in. Listen for yourself. Download episode zero. Download the subsequent episodes. I think you're going to find a consistency and an ear for detail with Kurt that you won't get in too many other podcasts. I mean, the man is organized. He's got it all laid out and polished. He's got his bumpers for his features all set up already. Now, when you hear my show, you know that I'm organized to the nth degree. And of course, in my case, you know that the value of N is... But not the camera guy, not Kurt the camera guy. He's got it under control. And he'll have a feast for you with The Wandering Geek. It's well done. Check it out. Next, a welcome to both the Frapper Map and the IDD FOS forums. And that welcome goes out to Cumulus the Nimblest from Merrillville, Indiana. Cumulus had this to say when placing his pin. Hail and well met. Annam, you have a strangely fascinating and addictive show. Thank you very much indeed. It's a pleasure to have you join us. And it's a pleasure to see your name also among us in the IDD FOS forums. Welcome, and thank you for joining. I've got to read a little outtake here from one of the very first forum posts done by Cumulus the Nimblest. It all revolves around the aspect of making an entrance. I'm going to paraphrase here a descriptive entrance.
Slowly rising, creaking, rusted iron portcullis reveals two iron-strapped great wooden doors that swing slowly inward. Cumulus appears in a cloud of roiling mist that flows across the lowered drawbridge into the castle courtyard. He doesn't walk. Nay, he seems to almost float through the mist, through the open gateway. Then a gust of wind comes along and washes away the mist, revealing the little red wagon carrying the smoke machine and a very long extension cord, and his faithful manservant, Drizzle, who pulls the wagon, crawling on all fours, while also pushing the skateboard that Cumulus stands on with a broomstick. Damn it.
I'm sorry, I like that a lot. That was very vivid. Hail and well met yourself there, Cumulus. What else did he write here?
I tried. Annam, I'm nervous now. I've never been mentioned on a podcast before. You're kind of a celebrity in my eyes, and I'm feeling a little stage fright. Anyone have any Dramamine?
Oh, man, a celebrity. What can I say to that? Tom Hanks, when the bathtub fell. So, yes, welcome very much indeed, and thank you for joining the Frapper Map and the forums, Cumulus the Nimblest. That's tough to say. That's hard. Cumulus the Nimblest. A play on words that can trace its origin all the way back to the mountain observatory of Ben Nevis, unless documentaries have lied to me. We have another welcome also, and a hearty handshake to Ron, also known as Farfig Newton. Ron also joined the Frapper Map, and he set his pin down in Tampa, Florida. And it had this written on it.
Pardon me, I have nothing to say.
No worries, Ron. On some days when I plug this mic in, I'm exactly the same way. But welcome anyway. It's more than enough to know that the Frapper Map membership is growing and that we're lucky enough to have you, too, as a new member. Thank you very much. I think you'll find that the stratospheric veranda is undergoing some weather lately. It has, we've got canvas tents and canopies pitched. Just little awnings that we've set up because we're enduring a little high-altitude rain and fog. It's a little chilly, but there's not much of a wind, and most of the cold is out there in the mist. Visibility is almost zero, but we're tucked in away under the awnings and under the canopies in our warm blankets in the deck chairs. We're sipping hot coffee, we're sipping hot tea, we're sipping hot cocoa, whatever we happen to like, and just grabbing a handful once in a while of a few graham crackers, pulling them out of a little box we each have tucked in beside us. Nothing spectacular for catering, but certainly very comfortable. Alrighty, what shall we do? We shall take a quick break and then come back in a bit.
Let's go.
We can.
Why not?
We're waiting for Godot.
Ah. Are you sure it was here?
What?
We were to wait.
He said by the tree. Do you see any others?
What is it?
I don't know. A willow?
Where are the leaves?
It must be dead.
No more weeping.
Or perhaps it's not the season.
Looks to me more like a bush.
A shrub.
A bush?
What are you insinuating? That we've come to the wrong place?
He should be here.
He didn't say for sure he'd come.
And if he doesn't come?
We'll come back tomorrow.
And the day after.
Possibly.
Tomorrow. And so on.
The point is...
Until he comes.
You're merciless.
Okay, I did say that I had a warning and a PayPal question earlier on. Thank you for reminding me, by the way. Was that cute? Isn't that cute the way I kind of like draw you into the show by pretending that you've reminded me? It's a little gimmick I came up with myself. I'm sure no one's ever done it before, but you can use it if you want. You know, if you're recording something or doing a show or playing, you have a podcast. Derails himself instantly. Get to the question or the warning. What is it? What is it? Well, listen, Mr. T was a superior and heroic listener, and he went ahead and ordered a copy of Hosting the Casimir, which he will have personalized and autographed. But he ordered it way back on May 10th, and for whatever reason, PayPal's little automated system didn't actually let us know about it. Didn't forward the email or notify us or anything, nothing about it. Fortunately, Mr. T contacted me trying to find out what was up, you know, I mean, trying to find out if we got the info, etc. So my question here is for any of you out there that may have also placed an order. Have you ordered Hosting the Casimir by C.E. Sales, i.e. Mrs. Adam 5? If you have, please fire off an email and let me know as soon as possible. We're looking into what's busted with the automation as far as PayPal is concerned, and we're going to be fixing that. But in the meantime, I don't want anybody left waiting for the book because we didn't get notification that it was ordered. That would be stinky. So, yeah, I have no doubts that we'll fix it, but in the meantime, I just want to be sure. And sorry about that, Mr. T. Okay. That's going to be cool, though, you know, going to the post office and shipping off a copy of Hosting the Casimir to Norway. That would mean it's being read in Norway, it's been read in England, it's been read in New Zealand. The internet is an amazing thing. Okay, what was next? That was that. Next, the podcast retriever. Oh, yes, I'm going to, next week, maybe a little later, I don't know, I'm going to be moving all of the MP3 files of episodes 21 through 39. I'm going to be moving them from Anim5 over to hotonionsoda.com, and it's strictly a space issue. It's strictly for archiving purposes, and all those episodes will remain available for download through the RSS feed and through the pages, but What I'm warning you about is this change may trigger your podcast catcher to try and download all 19 of those episodes all over again. I've personally noticed that with other podcasts, when they start moving files around, my podcast retrieval software sees that as a brand new episode, and it flags all of them for download. So anyway, I certainly don't want to take up a gig of nearly a gig of space on anyone's hard drive in one shot or anybody's MP3 player. So this is just a word of warning to put out here in episode 40 so that you keep a sharp eye out when you go to fetch episode 41. Just fiddle with whatever dials and settings you need to change in the method that you use to get podcasts to be sure that all you'll be getting is episode 41. Just a word there to be on the safe side. I don't want to glut anybody's machine by accident. Okay, good. That's done. Don't know where else to put this, so I'm going to put it here. It's extremely cool. It's outrageous geek goodness. It's a link from James, and it's to a Wired magazine article about the Weta Special Effects Group, the people that
They're the group that did the props and the special effects work for Lord of the Rings and King Kong, among other major films. And they're based in New Zealand. But in this case, the product is something absolutely gorgeous looking. They're ray guns. If you follow the link, you'll see sketches in the article. They are beautiful ray guns. These things are sexy and well-drawn weaponry. They're kind of a cross between Buck Rogers and Warner Brothers' Marvin the Martian and steampunk functionality. They're very tough to describe. You just have to see it. They look great. And the thing is, they're not just pictures. They are ray pistols that were actually built and which are for sale. That's the good news. The bad news is they're $690 a pop. Or should I say zap? But check the pictures out. Check them out anyway, folks. They're really superior works of art. You'll find that link, of course, in the Kudikatingatungatungs. And thank you, James, for pointing that out. Very cool. I have to mention here, too, I've been honored with yet another PDF product from Deep 7 by way of James Stubbs. This one is a title that you won't find at RPGNow.com. James, if they're supposed to be carrying this, you maybe want to get on the phone with them and say, hey, what's up? How come it's not listed? Or maybe you knew or know, whatever. I checked it out. The title is called, the PDF that I got from James is called Broadsword, and it's a full-fledged game using the 1PG system, along with the gameplay rules and character setup and the quality that you would come to expect from Deep 7. It's got 6 unique scenarios just to start you off in gameplay, and it's just a fine piece of work. It seems to me that you would be doing yourself a favor if you check these titles out. They're very well crafted. Hayoka Studios and Deep 7. They're very in-depth treatments of whatever. Whatever RPG aspect that they're covering or whatever game that they're outlining. Or are they affordable? Do you know how many Hayoka and Deep 7 publications you could download for the price of 1 Weta Studios ray gun? Well, it's a lot. It's probably more than they have published yet. So don't spend the money on a ray gun. Don't spend the $690 on a ray gun. The ray gun isn't going to work anyway. Instead, go check out RPGNow.com and look for Deep 7 and Hayoka Studios publications. You won't find Broadsword there. I mean, I looked. I checked. Maybe they're supposed to carry it and don't. Maybe it's just an older title that James wanted me to take a look at. Let me know, James. But thank you. Thank you very much once more. Now, on the same topic as ray guns, how did I sandwich Broadsword in with ray guns? I don't know. In case you don't happen to have $690 for a science fiction work of art, no matter how well it's done, there is always the option to make your own. Now, how would you do that? Well, as usual, while searching the internet for something entirely different, in this case, I was looking for the highest paid prices at auctions, and that's another story entirely that I'm not even going to get into in this episode. But while looking around, I found a link to a superb tutorial that shows you just exactly how to turn ordinary household items into a very impressive weapon from the future. Yes, I know. You're picturing Ralph Cramden in your mind. And no, it's nothing like that. You take those ordinary household items and you take a look at this ultra cool modeling tutorial for sci-fi guns and also ships as well. I'm going to put the link in the Kudikatingatungatungs. Of course, the site is www.lizardstomp.com. And this guy's got photos. He's got 3D modeling illustrations. He's got instructional text. All of it, it's just superior work. You take a look at the pictures and you just want to build one of these things. I mean, I looked at it. I was itching to do another tutorial. I wanted to do another tutorial set of pages for Game of the Podcasting, making use of my own stuff, but basing it pretty much on what this guy has here. And I couldn't come close. He's just got a great bunch of pages there. Found it completely by accident, And sometimes that's the best thing. Even if you don't plan on giving it a try, even if you don't want to build anything, certainly worth taking a look. He rocks. I like it. You might too. Next up, what's next? Moving on. Yes, I want to thank everyone that's been showing support and expressing their concerns over my current employment situation. I don't want to get too heavily into it, really, but I do thank you. I thank you very much. A lot of you were curious as to how the whole thing was going. Well, you probably, if you follow it in the news, and there's really no, there's no pressing need for you to actually do that, but if you want to check it out, you could probably find news articles online that are current. But the theater I work for, the question was, would it shut down or not? There seems to be some kind of a master plan in the works that most of us that work for the theater and the warehouse and shop that belong to it, well, we're not really in the loop on it. And it's really kind of understandable because, well, the folks that are calling the shots now are the folks that have the power to make things happen, and they're the people with money, and I certainly don't hang out in those circles. But there's public and private individuals, along with institutions and Milburn Township officials. They're all working on a plan to rescue the theater from oblivion. And, of course, as an employee of the shop and warehouse, that's in an entirely separate location, but is part and parcel of the theater as an institution. At least that's the way we look at it. My curiosity is, well, it extends beyond the fate of the theater. Things are looking much, much better for the theater now, but my hope is that these folks that are planning all this stuff will be attempting to save both the theater and the shop warehouse. But as it stands now, I don't know. The powers that be are working on it. I suppose I should just say that Schrodinger's cat has been let out of the box alive, for a while at least, until further notice. I have hopes. You know, I've got a whole couple other points to make on this, and it's just going to go into specifics about my job and this, and it's just, you know what, that's not entertaining, and I'm not going to go into it. Let's switch gears here. First of all, I'm just going to say thank you again. Thank you to everyone that's shown concern and offered suggestions, and thank you. I'm hanging in, and I repeat, I do well know that there are far, far worse things to happen than losing my job. But cool things happening. I am moving forward with these interviews for the podcast. Ventrilo didn't quite turn out to be as useful as I'd hoped. It was not nearly as user-friendly as Skype, and so I switched over to Skype, but it's all a go. I've kind of sort of figured out how to make it work, and I've been in contact with a few members of Podcast Land and plan to contact many more, but I'm not going to mention names because I'm not making promises for other people. I'm not going to make promises for other people's time, but I have gotten agreements from folks that will go ahead and give it a try, and when those Skype chats are recorded, then I'll have more to say. But they will happen. I can't wait. It's going to be very cool. All right, we're going to go into a little old time radio goofy thing of some kind, and then we'll do a promo or two, and when we return, we will hear a letter from James. Back in a bit.
We came here yesterday.
Oh, no. There, you're mistaken.
What did we do yesterday?
What did we do yesterday?
Yes.
Nothing is certain when you're about.
In my opinion, we were here.
You recognize the place?
I didn't say that.
Well,
it makes no difference.
All the same, that tree, that bog...
Are you sure it was this evening?
What?
We were to wait.
He said Saturday, I think.
Ah, you think?
I must have made a note of it.
But what Saturday? And is today Saturday? Isn't it rather Sunday? Or Monday? Or Friday?
Oh, it's not possible.
Or Thursday?
What'll we do?
If he came yesterday and we weren't here, you may be sure he wouldn't come again today.
But you said we were here yesterday.
I may be mistaken. Let's stop talking for a minute.
The Roll Monkeys. Have you sampled their game sessions yet? You have. You are so smart. Yep. The Roll Monkeys are going strong. They're currently continuing with their game. They're continuing with M-Force. They meet danger at every turn. There's monsters everywhere. Well, there's a few. There's a few monsters. I mean, you can't have monsters everywhere. You cannot have absolutely everywhere filled with monsters. It'd be a damn short game, wouldn't it? But you wouldn't be able to play it. Hi, we just defeated the killer catfish. What do we do now? Well, you die.
Why?
Because there's monsters everywhere. That doesn't work. Not how the game works. I'm misrepresenting it. But there's plenty of danger, plenty of excitement, plenty of humor, plenty of fun. The Roll Monkeys. Didn't I say I was going to read a letter? Yeah, I think I did. Here it is. It's from James. The title, the subject line is,
"Hey kids, get your own Junior God kit today. Only 5 box tops.
And James writes,
"Hi again, Adam 5. A few quick things before we get to my normal bitterness. I'd like to offer a suggestion for another podcast for the listeners. Audio Literature Odyssey."
And he includes the link, which of course will be in the Goodikatingatongatones.
Nicole Doolin is a professional reader for doing recorded books on tape, disc, etc. However, she also does her own readings of older books, and they are all, without exception, excellent. This is professional quality material for absolutely nothing.
I'm going to agree with James on that. I visited Nicole Doolin's site, and I wanted a quick sample, so I downloaded Jabberwocky just to give it a listen. And yes, very fine stuff. Thank you for the link. Thank you for the suggestion. Folks, check it out. He continues.
"Regarding Scotty's Ashes, I'm also disappointed. I also was under the understanding that you'd be shot up there and eventually just burn up upon re-entry. Looking at their website, however, they do offer a deep space mission purchase, at a significant upgrade in cost, in which your ashes do break orbit and send you off to wherever. Setting a geosynchronous orbit is a hazard to future space missions. There's already enough space junk up there that I really don't need Grandma's remains plinging off the space shuttle or the International Space Station."
Yeah, I did a little further reading also on that whole Scotty thing, and apparently the intention from the beginning was, yes, whoever's got their ashes on that little 20-foot rocket. That's the other thing. It's just this little 20-foot rocket, which apparently this was the company's first successful launch. I mean, that's what the article read. It was their first successful launch. I got to wonder how much money they spent on figuring out how to get one of these up there, to send the thing into a low orbital flight. And it was always the intention that the stuff comes back in a little vial which gets put on a plaque that tells everyone that it was shot into space, and you hang it on your wall in your house. Eh, whatever, you know. See, it really seems kind of lame to me. But the thing, the article says that it just took this little 20-foot rocket that got shot up to a 4-minute flight. So these ashes were only up there, I mean, I guess barely at the edge of space, for the same amount of time it takes Fat Tony to flood Springfield with booze and liquor again. 4 minutes. And then down it comes. Back to the letter.
"On the topic of healthcare, my sympathies, Kurt, I suspect that we're going to see a lot of people go ballistic when Michael Moore's new documentary, Sicko, hits. I won't go into what I think of the director, but I think that it's going to create a lot of needed criticism and evaluation. Maybe things will improve, or maybe they'll just go back to the way they were after the firestorm. But at least these HMOs and whatnot will know that we're watching them, and that there is now a widespread public forum for it."
That's interesting. I hadn't heard about that yet. I'm, I definitely want to check that out when it gets released.
Now on to the main topic, playing God. Personally, I intend on becoming a fickle bastard vengeful god who just wants to be left alone and not bothered with your stupid troubles. Deal with them yourself. I've got virgins and ambrosia to take care of. I've seen this argument both in AI and with genetic research. Why shouldn't we play God? Disregarding religion, the human mind is a fantastic machine. Cranial capacity is what evolution is about. To better ourselves as a race, we need to constantly expand and learn. Shackling ourselves to a concept that has no logical or rational basis in fact is an artificial limit. How many people opposed to genetic research are going to turn down a life-saving injection of stem cells? Things become quite different when the shoe is on the other foot. Or, as my father used to say, we spend the first half of our lives trying to kill ourselves and the other half trying to live.
I'm sorry, that reminds me of a Mark Twain quote.
I suppose it's a good idea to obey all the rules when you're young, just so you'll have strength enough to break them when you get older.
Actually, I suppose that's the opposite, isn't it? I'm sorry. He continues.
If some fetus has to go to save my own life, I'm a selfish bastard. If there's a 10% chance that some experimental medical treatment will save me, sign me up. 10% is better than no chance at all. God, assuming you believe in the concept, is a bit of a weird thing. If God never intended us to unlock the human genome or to develop artificial life, why was that information ever allowed to be known? The devil? Excuse me while I laugh at one deity validating the existence of another, neither of which being provable. And I think, before I build up a really big load of indignation, I'm going to stop it before I get really pissed off. James Stubbs.
Thank you, James. James, when are you going to quit beating around the bush and tell us what you really, really think? I'm sorry. No, Mr. S pulls no punches, and that's just fine. Hey, where else can you talk about this stuff? That's the whole point of podcasting, folks. You got something to say and you want to write in? What's stopping you? I'm going to mention it here, but you'll see it in the Gooditinga-Donga-Dungs. He attached a picture to that email showing a cat being held up soaking wet. You may have seen the picture. I'd never had actually before, but presumably the cat's just been given a bath, and the caption explains about its revenge. Its revenge would be slow and torturous and involve turning you inside out over a long period of time. A very funny visual. I don't think I'll get in trouble for posting it, because it's probably all over the place. I love those types of images, pictures with a punch. Incidentally, you mentioned earlier about the mind is a fantastic machine and artificial limitations and evolution. I got a very brief email from Kurt the Camera Guy, which was pretty much a topic suggestion for a future episode. Inspired by Dragon Page, cover to cover, he had just listened to an episode, and the topic was transhumanism. And I took a look at the Wikipedia listing for it, that Kurt included, and it does look like a fascinating subject to go into. Has anybody got any thoughts on that? If you do, please feel free, write in. Have I mentioned the email address and website lately? Are you a new listener? I'm sorry. I got to learn to keep on top of that. It's anim5, that's animation without the Asian, A-N-I-M, anim5, that's the number 5, not the word 5, at anim5.com. I really picked a lousy handle to have to use in audio, but there it is, anim5@anim5.com. And, of course, the website is www.anim5.com. So, yes, write in if you've got any thoughts on it. Transhumanism, the more I read, the more I realized that I know nearly nothing about it, particularly about its history. I know nothing about how it applies in the real world. I only think I know what it means from science fiction and movies and TV, so why don't we make that one of the topics for episode 41? Let's call that the starboard side of episode 41, transhumanism. Anyone's thoughts on that?
And for the port side of the ship, for the port side of episode 41, idiosyncrasies. A few treatments of the artificial intelligence question brought up the human element of idiosyncrasies, personal characteristics or quirks that set one individual apart from the rest. They can be phobias, they can be bizarre or baseless habits, they can be personal rituals or routines that serve no purpose. Do you have any? Do you know people that have them? I know I've got one. I like to, when I go up or down a set of stairs, I always like to end, whether it's at the top or the bottom, I always like to end with my right foot. I always like to reach the last step, the top step or the bottom floor level with my right foot. And if I find that I'm not going to, I will switch feet. I will not land on the left foot. I will leave it where it was and pick up the right foot and do that. Makes no sense whatsoever. But I do it all the time. Always have. Or at least as long as I can remember. That kind of thing. And let me stick a warning label on this for you. Don't send me your husband's or your wife's or your parents' or your kids' idiosyncrasies if they don't particularly want them known, because I'm just going to have to change the email to someone you know, and that's too much work. I don't want to be starting any fights here. If you know that they don't particularly give a crap, then that's fine. But yes, two topics for episode 41, at least. Maybe we'll, maybe it might even go on into 42. I won't know until I get the feedback. Transhumanism and idiosyncrasies. All right, we're going to take a quick break, hear some more promos, and when we return, we will hear from Nerdcore Steve. Back in a bit.
I was asleep. Why will you never let me sleep?
I felt lonely.
I had a dream.
Don't tell me.
I was dreaming...
Don't tell me!
This one is enough for you?
It's not nice of you, Dee Dee.
Who am I to tell my private nightmares to if I can't tell them to you?
Let them remain private. You know I can't bear that.
There are times when I wonder if it wouldn't be better if we parted.
You wouldn't go far.
That would be too bad, really too bad. Wouldn't it, Dee Dee, be really too bad? When you think of the beauty of the way and the goodness of the wayfarers, wouldn't it, Dee Dee?
Calm yourself.
Calm. Calm. The English say calm.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
In 1798, Sultan Selim III of Turkey, in the presence of British Ambassador Sir Robert Ainslie, shot an arrow the incredible distance of 2,916 feet. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you the story of a remarkable woman. Lucy Page of Tamworth, New Hampshire, certainly exploded the theory that women are the weaker sex. In addition to doing all of her regular housework, she cared for two cows, made all the clothing for her family, spun 200 skeins of wool yarn and 45 skeins of linen yarn, wove 90 yards of carpeting, made 69 yards of flannel and 21 yards of toweling. And she did all of this at the age of 73, believe it or not.
Okay, then. This next email from Nerdcore Steve has a subject line,
Robots, Computers.
And Nerdcore writes,
Hi, Adam. I apologize for the length of this email. I really did set out to write a shorter one than last time. You've posed an interesting question that's never occurred to me.
You know what? This isn't really actually that long an email, so no need to apologize. Continuing.
I have always assumed that there was a real danger that most people would never believe any machine could be self-aware. I suppose my opinion of how humanity might treat any mechanical people was shaped by movies, cartoons, and a few PBS programs. If instead of creating a slave race of self-aware machines that are treated as property, we get the opposite problem, that of the majority of people treating machines that weren't people as if they were, I'm not sure how much of a problem that would really be. So, some lonely guy falls in love with and marries his android sex toy. Or, some kid loves his talking teddy bear even though it only says, "I love you," because it's programmed to. It's a little sad. And maybe a bit creepy. Perhaps we can talk about the mental health ramifications of such relationships. But I suppose I have been trained by years of science fiction movies and comics to be more concerned with the fate of Data, or Hal, or Johnny Five. If Hal isn't treated like a person because he's less friendly than a kid's toy, then I would become concerned. Won't most people believe that they have wills and minds regardless of the circuitry? I'm not the only one who's watched Star Trek or read Asimov, so I'm sure there will be many a little too eager to accept machines as sentient. But I can't help thinking there would be a large number who wouldn't accept any machine as a person, no matter how much he acted like one, and no matter how much his design indicated that he was self-aware. Some will claim that machines can never have souls. This could become a hot political issue, one just as contentious as abortion at some point in our future. Nerdcore Steve.
Thank you very much, Nerdcore. You know, in a way, it already is a hot issue without even getting into sentient machines, and without even actually having electricity. We've been fighting for millennia, and right up to this very hour, just as human beings, arguing the truth or the falsehood that people have souls, or that some souls are evil and others are not, or that some people have souls and some people don't. And it's already a bone of contention, and we haven't even been rescued by Robbie the Robot yet. I'd also venture a guess that the world would have to have a significantly different economic structure to it before before that classic multi-talented walking humanoid robot came into mass production. I mean, if we had the type of mechanism that's shown in iRobot without much else changing, if things were as they are today and not much changed, and we could mass produce a creation that complex and mass produce it cheaply, then the protests would likely ignore self-awareness altogether. I'm getting completely away from the topic and the points that Nerdcore made, but I'm just thinking out loud here and moving with it. The protests, if we could do that, would bypass self-awareness completely. It wouldn't focus on that at all. It'd focus mainly on the fact that human beings are out of work all over the planet. Yeah, I think people would probably scream about that long before robots' rights or android liberation or cyborg solidarity or whatever, before any of those things become issues. But more back to the letter, Nerdcore mentioned psychological ramifications of emotional involvement with an artificial intelligence. I wouldn't even know where to start with that. Wouldn't even know where to start with that. Partly because I'm not a psychologist, but mostly because there's so many possible ways for it to happen. And on so many different levels. Human beings seem to be hardwired, if you'll pardon the analogy, it seems to be a hardwired thing with people that they need to have social interaction or they go nuts. And what popped into my head, it's totally non-robot related, but it's along the same line of thought. Do you remember, has anyone seen Castaway? I think it's called Castaway, isn't it? The one with Tom Hanks, the recent one where he's a FedEx executive who gets trapped on the island. Look what happened there. All he had was a kickball with a handprint on it. That's all he had. Just a little ball with a crude face drawn on it. I know it's a work of fiction. I mean, I know it's all movie land stuff, but maybe I shouldn't even bring it up, but I could see that dependence or that connection to a psychological tool or outlet, like that thing of otherness, that little ball with a face. I mean, he was talking to it all through the movie and became socially attached to it. When he took it with him when he escaped the island, and he cried when the thing got washed away in the storm like he'd lost his best friend,
If that kind of connection has any basis in true human traits, and it's not just something that grew out of movie story, can you imagine how much stronger a bond can be manufactured inside the mind of a person who's interacting with an inanimate object that actually starts talking back and that moves around and reacts to the environment the same way we do? It's amazing stuff. It's amazing stuff. It's probably going to become more and more of a philosophical topic for discussion at the very least when these things become possible and for real. Okay, what's up next? A break? No, we just had a break. We're going to do that high-speed chipmunk roundup, summation of episodes 21 through 39. Very quick, very fast. I'm going to do this every 20 episodes. It won't take long. It'll be a good reference for new listeners and for old. So, here we go.
Episode 21, responses to the powers of Superman question from episode 20. Also, links to the fine examples of creativity called for from listeners. Episode 22, we first broached the question of Homo sapiens, how did evolution turn out dangerous mutants like us? Episode 23, the dream episode, discussion of dream, sleep, and nightmare. Also where I indulge myself in a mini-drama based on the Goon Show. Episode 24, part 1 of 3, where we begin the discussion of the role of humanity in the natural evolution of the Earth. Episode 25, a continuation of that discussion, where we get more into the ideas of Daniel Quinn. Episode 25 features superb listener feedback, and quite a lot of it. Episode 26, part 3 of 3, and continuing with the topic of humanity and civilization. Again, superior listener feedback. Episode 27, again, superior listener feedback, and we begin discussions on the topics of religion, mythology, and the Adam and Eve story. Episode 28, further discussion of humanity and evolution, mixing in the mythology and religious topics. Episode 29 came in two parts. One was an hour and 7 minutes, the other was 47 minutes, and the topic was religion. Just prior to episode 30, we had the lunatic cardboard scenery land rant. That was on November 30th in 2006. Episode 30, a pre-holiday bonanza of listener emails. A very rich show, 2 hours and 11 minutes. Episode 31, Christmas Eve, 2006. We wrap up the topics of civilization and humanity, as covered by Daniel Quinn and explored by Jason Gadeski, and we step away from the maze of religion and politics and morality for just a little while. Prior to episode 32, we get the live recording from the TikTok Diner, where Nev of Does Mike Geek Look Big In This, Caroline and Sasha from Game of the Podcasting, and Working Man and Tangent and Gazebo Boy from Fistful of Comics and Games, and myself, all met for breakfast. November 6th, 2006. The podcast was released on December 31st. Episode 32, continued superb listener feedback on a variety of topics from recent episodes. Episode 33, again, an extremely diverse and rich episode with listener feedback on a wide variety of topics. Main theme might be considered a unified field of consciousness. Episode 34, main topic was, do we humans create our own reality through shared and focused belief? Do we turn our myth into truth, affecting that reality in tangible ways? Episode 35, we try to answer the question of, what's up with all these people who accentuate the negative all the time? Melancholia. Why is it so prevalent? Why is it so popular? Just prior to episode 36, a supplement. An interview with Mrs. Adam 5, covering computer and console gaming from a woman's perspective. Transmission 36. Another great mix of emails from listeners, covering the topic of gender issues in tabletop RPGs and online interactive environments. Just prior to episode 37, we get another corrugated cardboard rant. This one called Corrugated Wailings from Adhesive Stink Fog Land. Episode 37, Cosmic Dice Rolls That Affect Individual Realities. Episode 38, Adam 5, after having been gone for a month, explains why he was away. It was that whole being scared out of his wits because of possible job loss situation thing. Also, emails are read about the actual topic of discussion, which was artificial intelligence and self-awareness. Episode 39, a continuation of the artificial intelligence topic from episode 38. Episode 40, well, you're hearing it now, and so it's time to put the chipmunk away. Thanks.
And there we have it, 19 episodes about to be archived as we look forward to episodes 41 through 60. If you folks listening have enjoyed where this podcast has gone since episode 20, or even from the beginning, and if you know someone that might enjoy International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, please let them know we're here. The show can only get better and more fun with more listeners, so please spread the word.
Send a link, maybe, to somebody you know who might be interested in just one or two specific shows. They aren't all winners, I know that for sure, but here at episode 40, I can look back and say they've been a lot of fun to do, and I'm looking forward to keeping it coming. And I've got to thank all of you that have listened since the beginning, and anyone that's gone through the grueling task of actually downloading and listening to all the shows. My hat's off to you. You've got a lot of patience, and thank you very much. Maybe when I get to the year 2008, 40 shows is going to seem cute. Who knows? Anyway, it's becoming time, well, it is time, for the Old Time Radio Feature. This week, the show is Journey into Space, and it's an amazingly good science fiction series produced for the BBC back in 1953. When I first heard it, I was I was struck by the exceptional sound quality. I mean, these recordings are from 54 years ago. And secondly, I was impressed by how smart it was. It was a departure from the norm. It was a far cry from Space Patrol. You know, the kiddie treatment a lot of its counterparts had. It's an adventure series that actually tells a coherent story over many years, over the years it was broadcast. Anyway, here's 1 minute and 30 seconds of it, just for a taste.
Here. Perhaps they don't exist physically at all.
Then how come they need physical ships? Why build them in the first place?
Oh, just because they build them don't mean they've got to fly in them. Any more than a meteorologist flies in a weather balloon.
But supposing they do fly in them, that they have some kind of physical shape, they may be much tougher than us. Perhaps high acceleration doesn't affect them at all. Maybe that's why they can fly so fast, maneuver so easily.
If they start throwing this thing around the way they do their other ships, they'll probably kill us all.
Yeah, but do they realize that? Do they know exactly how much the human body can stand?
Look, Jet, I think we'd better try and contact them. Make sure they do realize just what kind of creatures we are.
Yeah, tell them. Take it easy. Tell them we're weak. Very weak.
Yeah.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Try him again, Jet.
Hello? Hello, crew of Luna calling. Can you hear me? Hello?
The radio seems to be dead. I can't hear a thing.
Well, I can.
Eh?
Yes, I can. That music. Not quite the same as before, but I can hear it.
Yeah, so can I.
And there's some kind of pressure building up. Can't you feel it?
Yeah. Yeah. We must be taking off.
We are taking off. This ship's on the move in a vertical climb.
Hello. Hello.
Blimey, we'd be squashed flat. I know it.
Hello. Hello.
Pressure's getting stronger. Hey, look, we better lie down, all of us.
What, on the floor?
Yeah, where else?
With no shock absorbers to protect us or anything?
Lie down, Libby. Go. All of you, lie flat.
Oh, dear.
That's Journey into Space, Jet Morgan and his crew in, that was from episode 9, from the first story set, first season called Operation Luna. That particular broadcast went on to do two more seasons, The Red Planet Mars, and then The Earth in Peril. There's plenty of cliches in it. I mean, there are elements of the show that became cliches, but overall, that particular series had very intelligent scripting, and it respected the science fiction genre and its audience, and it had extremely high production values. If you're at all a fan of science fiction, vintage science fiction, I'd highly recommend that you find an old-time radio website that offers to sell the whole series. You can get every episode from all 3 years of it, Journey into Space. 52 episodes on, they fit as MP3s, they fit on one CD. It's quality radio, and it's a gem from the past worth preserving. Of course, the full 27 minutes of episode 9 you can download, as usual, from the link on the IDD FOS homepage under this show's heading. Episode 9 from Operation Luna, the first season. Well, I'm going to start wrapping up here. I'm going to start closing out this here episode number 40. I don't know whether you could tell from the sound quality or the change or not, but through the magic of digital editing, I find myself finishing the show on night number 2 of recording it, It got into the really wee hours in the morning. This morning, yesterday morning, whatever. And I've lost my internet connection. It's Wednesday the 30th. Actually, since it's past midnight, it's Thursday the 31st. Whatever. The cable connection when we got home wasn't working. It wasn't working at all. The only reason you're hearing this is because I uploaded it from work. I hate being cut off from the internet. I hate it. Makes me all nervous and cranky. And Mrs. Adam 5 hates it too. She had monsters to kill. And she had a guild raid that she couldn't participate in. It sucks. Sure as hell hope it's fixed by Thursday night. Tonight. Whatever. We're gonna start getting the shakes. I'll have to drive back to work and check my email. I get all fidgety. Makes me all fidgety to have no internet. I feel like Gogo and Didi wandering in surreal isolation, waiting for it to return. Which is my clumsy way of segueing into telling you that the snippets of old-time radio goofiness you heard throughout this episode were from Waiting for Godot, starring Burt Lahr and E.G. Marshall. But we're coming up on the end, and I'm going to close out episode 40 with a kind of a departure from what I've usually done. Yes, I'm going to have closing music, but in the over the course of the entire run of this podcast, the little bits of closing music that you've usually heard have been from vintage recordings or radio broadcasts. Not in every case, but most of the time. But I think from now on, in IDDFOS, I'm going to diversify a bit. I'm going to take advantage of the same resources that many other podcasts have, and that is the PodSafe music website and Magnatunes. They just have too many talented people to ignore. And these people deserve to be heard, and they do great work, and the quality just really demands attention. But there's still gonna be the occasional RMSO.
Really moldy, scratchy, oldy.
But this week I found a beautiful piece of work that was offered by PodSafe. I'll play that, and on the opposite side, I'll be saying my goodbyes. This is a piano piece by a composer named Stefan Geist, and the title of it is simply Track 1, and here it is. I get really jealous of amazingly good musicians. That guy's good. That piece was composed and played by Stephen Geist. Stephen Geist? S-T-E-P-H-E-N. Is that Stephen? I can't really pronounce it. Stephen Geist. G-E-I-S-T. Check him out on podsafe.com. He reminds me of George Winston when I first started listening to George Winston about 20 years ago. Same simplicity. All right, well, we reached the end of episode 40. Wow. It's way fewer shows than most podcasts, but it's a lot of shows to me. Actually, it's probably more than 40 when you count bonus episodes and rants and supplements, but 40 is enough. It seems strange to know that I've been doing this for more than a year. Well, whatever. I hope you enjoyed it. I'd like to thank once more James Stubbs and Nerdcore and Camera Guy for writing in. I'd like to congratulate again Dickie the Stealth Geek for returning to production. And once again congratulate Camera Guy for his launch of The Wandering Geek. Thanks once more to Cumulus the Nimblest and to Ron. New pins on the Frapper Map, and proud new observers on the Stratospheric Veranda. Finest congratulations and warm wishes to Caroline and Jeff, and I'd like to thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us again for episode 41. That, of course, will be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.